Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94 Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from the Mirror End, and I'm joined, as always, by Estelle Vazadevan from the Papere. Sri Lanka 99.94 is your new home for Sri Lankan content, and we'll be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube or the 99.94 app several times every week. So do please rate, review and subscribe. Thanks for joining Cricket's conversation. Estelle, it's been like with the first and second editions, Jaffna have won the tournament again. What was you kind of going into the tournament? Me and you both suspected that they'll be the team to beat. They didn't have it all their own way through the tournament. They lost to Kandy a couple of times, but when it really mattered, they got those wins, right? Were you expecting anything different, or was the outcome as expected? Sorry, guys, I'm sneezing a little bit. It's because I've actually just landed in Melbourne, and I have absolutely no idea what the time is, and my head is just decompressing from London, Colombo and Melbourne. But don't worry, if you're listening at home and thinking, oh no, Mark's sick, I'm not, I'm absolutely fine, I'll be all right. Estelle, give us your thoughts on that final today between Jaffna and Colombo.
Yeah, you're right. We kind of looked at the teams before the tournament, and the thinking was that Jaffna would do well. And obviously, this time around, it seemed like all the squads are kind of more balanced. I would say I'd be really disappointed with the way Gaul and Damula performed, and rightly, they were the first two teams to be knocked out. Jaffna have a knack of winning the big games, don't they? And we saw that in the previous two seasons as well. When it was necessary, when they needed to step up, they've done it. So in this tournament as well, Kandy were the kind of the team of the tournament after that league stage. They'd won every game except for one. And, you know, they looked like they would go all the way, ended up not even making the final. So Jaffna, I think, just when it comes to those pressure situations and pressure games, the important times, that they just have kind of the experience as well as the type of players who can pull off.
Yeah, it's how often we see in these big franchise tournaments that the kind of pace-setting team fall away at the final or the penultimate hurdle. We kind of saw that with Kandy, right? Because Kandy was superb for much of it. But then when it came to it, they couldn't get those wins in that they needed in the playoff and the eliminator to get to the final. They basically had two shots at it and messed it up. I always wonder, this is why I'm not a big fan of this whole, the top two can still lose that first game and still have another chance to make it in. Because I think once you've lost that first game, once they lost Jaffna, they kind of lost momentum. And then you play against that Colombo side, which is full of, and we'll get onto this in a bit more, but it's full of players who have a lot of experience and can really tighten the screws when things aren't going right, and they just kind of came totally undone at that key moment, right?
I disagree. I think it's a massive advantage, them finishing first and getting that qualifier plus eliminator, because they had a second shot at it. If it was a semi-final scenario where you lose the semi-final and you're out, then they would have been out, right? But of course, like, you look at it, they would probably have faced Gaul Gladiators, because Gladiators finished fourth on the table at the end of the league stage. So maybe they would have had a better chance of making it through. But I think this system is fair in the sense of, like, I mean, Kandy can have no gripe about it because they had two opportunities to go through. Colombo had to play, you know, all out 3 days in a row. But they had an opportunity to kind of take stock of things and regroup and play the next game. I think they were a bit unlucky against Jaffna because it was a rain-interrupted game and they didn't get like the full complement of overs with the ball. And they are, of course, a good bowling side. So they must have felt a little bit hard done by that, but that's the weather, right? You can't control that. I don't have a problem with the playoff system. I don't think Kandy should either, because I think, you know, they had an advantage unfortunately, they had two bad days in a row and, you know, had to go out.
Can we talk about the final? 163 is what Colombo made, 163-5. I thought, to me, that looked like a decent score. They've rebuilt their innings after losing wickets at when kind of moments when you're going to crack on here and get a big score. The kind of main run scores for them were Chandimal, Asalanka, and Ravi Bopara. I mean, Ravi Bopara is one of my favourite English cricketers, and that's not because he owns a chicken shop locally to me. But he's exciting to watch, and he's actually, you know, I think he's played in every edition of the Lanka Premier League. He scored lots of runs in the Lanka Premier League as well. They managed to keep the strike rate quite high. And then Jaffna come in, maintain the kind of strike rate that they need to score those runs, but are still kind of losing wickets, but still manage to just do what they need to do, right? We've talked a lot about this Jaffna side, but that final win was actually quite extraordinary when you break it and you look at the actual figures, right?
Yeah, and again, I think we spoke about this, the importance of having someone like Gurbaz at the top of the order. I think he got something like 30 of 16 deliveries at the top. And suddenly the equation when he was dismissed, if I am not mistaken, was something like 115 of 95, right? So from 164 of 120, to bring the equation down, already you're ahead of the game at that point. And maybe the opposition is already thinking about, you know, losing the game. So that's, I think, why he's such an important player to the Jaffna side. You look at the top run scorers, he's probably not among the top five. But just the impact he makes with his runs helps guys like Avishka Fernando come in there and, you know, take their time and kind of play that anchor role. Avishka, of course, named player of the match yesterday, but I think a lot of credit for that innings should be given to someone like Gurbaz. I think they complement each other well, because from Gurbaz's point of view, he kind of knows that Avishka is not going to give away his wicket that easily, so he can go out there and go after the bowling. And on the opposite end, Avishka knows that he can take his time a little bit, so long as, you know, Gurbaz is at the crease. Another guy, Sadhira Samaravikram. I'm really, really happy that he was named player of the series, because for once, the player with the most runs wasn't given the award, but they were actually looking at people who made a difference to their teams and played some match-winning knocks. And Samaravikram, I think if you look at the entire tournament as a whole, as a middle-order batter, he's had such a massive impact. If you look at run scorers list, you don't see that many middle order batters in the LPL who have done well. So that's a massive thing for him. And for a guy coming in, like I said, I heard that he was told he's not being considered for limited overs cricket by SLC at the moment. For a guy who has been told that, to come and put in that kind of performance, just incredible. I was just looking through kind of his numbers. Last season, he wasn't even picked in the draft last season, right? He was a late addition to the Gladiators side, then played just one game, made a duck. And here he comes in to Jaffna, and he's been, of course, he's named player of the tournament, but he's been such a massive, the impact he's had is so big, because you don't expect a guy like him. He's very much in the kind of Dhananjay De Silva mold type of batsman. But the way he was able to score quickly, I think, was massive. Even yesterday's game, just similar to Gurbaz, he allowed Avishka Fernando to kind of take his time and stay at the crease because of the way he played. So that's, I think, three key people in yesterday's win for the Jaffna Kings.
Coming off the back of the World Cup, one of the criticisms was is that the strike rate for Sri Lanka, for too many of Sri Lanka's batters, was too low. The scores in almost every game, apart from a couple of exceptions, were pretty high, with high strike rates, right? Do we know, have you heard anything, if this was, you know, something that people are trying to address? They were like, we want the players to score big. We're overvaluing keeping our wicket at the moment. We don't need to be doing that. Or do we think this is something that just come out from the players naturally, and they just thought to push on to the next level, to make that impact. We need to score big runs quickly. Because, I mean, we talked about Avishka there as an anchor. It strikes me that Sri Lanka at the moment has probably about 4 or 5 players who can play that anchor role really well, right?
Yeah, I think it's completely natural. I'm not sure there was much of a kind of a push from, definitely not Sri Lanka cricket, but maybe it was definitely part of Jaffna's plan, I think, to have Gurbaz go after the bowling. You saw him yesterday in the first over. I'm not sure if you watched the game, but or you were able to watch yesterday. But if you watch it, like from the first over onwards,
I didn't watch it live, and I didn't watch it legally, but I have watched it.
Yeah, how could you miss that final? Right, it was exactly. A great game. Just that. Kandambi's and the Jaffna management's plan seemed to be that one player sticks around and the other guy goes after the bowling. And that's how it kind of worked out with Gurbaz and Avishka. But I don't think there was ever an overall kind of push towards that kind of that enforcer style of play. I think it just comes naturally to guys like Sadhira Samarawikrama. Even Nuanidu Fernando, I thought, was very, very impressive right throughout. So you're right. Like if you look at the Sri Lankan team, there are so many openers available, and it seems like all of them play that one kind of role, which is why I think during the World Cup we saw a little bit of a change in Kusal Mendis. He did take on that kind of enforcer kind of role in both the Asia Cup and the World Cup. So I don't think they're at a stage where both batters go after the bowling like we see from teams like England, but you know, at least one guy is definitely trying to, you know, score at a higher pace now rather than stay at the wicket and keep wickets in hand.
And the other thing that I think is so striking, and it's something we've mentioned on this podcast before, is how sophisticated some of the tactics are getting and how resilient the teams are becoming, right? Because if you go back and look at domestic T20 cricket in Sri Lanka 3-4 seasons ago, or even the beginning of the LPL, once they start losing wickets, it seems to all quickly fall apart. But now we're seeing quite regularly that rebuilding of innings. We saw it with Jaffna win the title with rebuilding innings. They win the title with a bowler scoring a boundary, right? That was just shows that, you know, players are thinking about the skills that they need to play at the higher levels off T20 cricket, and it's brilliant to see. I also want to talk about the management of Jaffna Kings, because we've talked about how, you know, they've been the most consistent team. They've won it 3 years in a row, which is almost unheard of in any T20 tournament, right, around the world. But now you look at Kandambi, you look at Tisra Pereira, and you think these are guys who probably should be in given the opportunity. And I'm not just saying for the national side, I'm saying for other T20 franchises around the world to go and prove out that they can do that in other places, right? And I for one, would love to see that.
Yeah, I saw a tweet earlier today from Lasith Malinga mentioning that it is time for someone like Thilna Kandambi to get an opportunity to join the national setup, which I thought that's a huge endorsement, right? From a guy like Malinga, he's played around the world. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to T20 franchise cricket. So if he's endorsing someone like Kandambi, there's definitely something to look at if you hadn't realized it already. I mean, he's won 3 LPLs as coach. He captained the Uvanex team in the OG, the original LPL, the SLPL back in 2012. So he's definitely got something going for him. And I think just even that, the tactic of sending Binura Fernando in at that moment, I think in most games, Vyaskant would probably have come up ahead of him, but they realized that at that point, they need a boundary in that over. Even Tikshana was sent in, I believe, with the kind of the license to just swing as hard as you can and get a boundary in those last 2 deliveries. Unfortunately, he was run out, but that's the kind of, I think, the intent-focused play that Kandambi is pushing, rather than maybe, you know, give the strike to Tisra Pereira, let him get the runs for you. Just your job is to run, get him on strike. you tell the bowler, look, you have nothing to lose. Go for a boundary those last two deliveries. If it comes through, then we are chasing a very small target in the last over. And like chances are you're going to do it successfully, right? And that's exactly what we saw yesterday. Binura Fernando, I was thinking, look, this guy could hardly manage to finish his four overs, right? He was holding on to his side, his back. He looked in really, he looked bad in pain.
Shape. Yeah.
But yeah, and they sent him in. You're thinking, oh gosh, how is he gonna run? How is he gonna kind of handle himself? But his job was get that boundary, that one boundary, and then you know, match was basically won in that penultimate over.
Also, the other thing I just will say about Jaffna as a final thing is that everyone just looks like they're having a great time, which I know sounds like flippant, and you know, people say they are a group of young men who get paid to play cricket, something that you know everyone would love to do. But there's so many times you see, particularly in franchise cricket, you see players and you see teams and they just do not look like that. They go through the motions, right? But everyone seems to be so well engaged with it. They all absolutely seem to just love it, and they're all playing for each other. And you know, as you say, that maybe that Binura Fernando getting that four to finish the game is the ultimate example of it, right? He comes out, we know that he's not in the greatest shape and fitness in that moment, but he comes out and gets the job done because he wants to do it for everyone, right? And then you see the way they celebrate on social media, they all love it. And you know, this is why the Lanka Premier League is the greatest T20 franchise tournament in the world, because of the sheer passion involved in it and in the players, right? I just think there's got to be people looking at Tilan Kandambi and just going, He deserves a chance, but in the like, I'll be honest, I don't think he's going to get an IPL. You know, they're not going to let him manage an IPL team this season. But he should be looking, and I don't know how any of this works. I don't know if he's contracted to SLC, so I don't know if they'll let him do this. But I think he should be looking to try and, you know, go over and coach in the UAE or in South Africa or Bangladesh with 100. There's so many other franchise tournaments around the world that he could try and get involved in, and you just look at that record and you think, yeah, he's got to try and push on. And Sri Lankan coaches are in vogue, right? The IPL, this two of the teams are headlined by, looked after by admittedly Sri Lankan legends of the game, not just Sri Lankan legends of the game, but you know, people do give Sri Lankan or former Sri Lankan players a chance. So I think his time is coming, and it's definitely, if you're a Sri Lankan cricket fan, I think it's only a matter of time before he gets the national team job. But I do think it would be nice for him to go get experience elsewhere before he gets that job. You know, just because different places have different cultures. You know, how quickly can he turn it around? Inevitably, he's going to get the Sri Lankan job at a moment of there being some sort of crisis within the team. He's, you know, no one's ever going to leave the job in a good
Sri Lanka
place.
Cricket don't like local head coaches, do they?
No.
So I don't know how inevitable that is, because they don't seem to like having a local coach as head coach for very long. So why not go in for a women's team? Matthew Motts had huge success, hasn't he?
Maybe
he won a World Cup. You know that could be the platform that Kandambi is looking like he needs, because like you said, it's unlikely that he's going to get a gig at the IPL. I don't know what he's focused on whether it's franchise leagues only, or you know, T20 cricket only, or whatever. But you know, why not look at some of the women's teams, not just Sri Lanka, but around the world. He's definitely he has the kind of the record to back him up. It's about, you know, familiarizing yourself with the women's game, you know, and all the little complexities that come with that. And maybe then there's an opportunity further down the line with one of the men's teams as well. Just kind of a thought, because just looking at Matthew Mott, that seems like a kind of, that seems a pathway for someone like Kandambi too.
Well, do we know who the coach is taking the team to South Africa when the World Cup, the women's side to South Africa for the World Cup in February? I mean, what's Tim and Kandambi up to in February? Like, I heard South Africa's lovely that time of year. Why don't they just give it to him and let him take him? Like, you know, what have we got to lose at this stage? Nothing. If they don't have a coach, let him do it, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that. But of course, it's also, you know, it's not the same as coaching a men's team, right? There's so many other little complexities involved in that. But yeah.
But it isn't. But ultimately, it's coaching is coaching, right? It's the same game. It's the same rules. All right, the boundaries are slightly further in. But it's the same kind of tactics, right? And the challenge of coaching is being able to go to different environments and to get them to perform. And as you say, maybe he follows that Matthew Mott route. Or hopefully, if he does win a World Cup, it's not with Australia or England. It's not with
England. My gosh,
like, it's not too bad. Gosh, it could be worse. It could be Australia. Anyway, should we take a break there? Then we should talk about the standout players this tournament.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sarah Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI, we've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
So Estelle, we're talking about the Lanka Premier League. That's just concluded. Do we want to give our 11s? Shall I let you go first?
Yep, let's go for it.
And then I will, I think the way we'll do this, because I don't have mine written
make
down.
Make one now.
Yeah, I'll let you go first and I'll tell you which ones I disagree with, basically. I think that's the way to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So just before I name the 11, I will say I'm not very sure about some of the picks, but I think you'll agree with me on most. So I've got Gurbaz and Avishka opening the batting, Kamindu Mendis at 3, Sadhir Samaravikrama at 4, and he will take the gloves. Then I've got Ravi Bopara, who I did not see myself picking, but I have in the end. Bopara at 5, Nuwanindu Fernando at 6. I picked Tisra Pereira at 7, and he will, of course, be captain. Carlos Brathwaite at 8, Vyaskant at 9, Kasun Rajitha at 10, and Nuwan Tushara at 11.
So there's no space for Asalanka or for Angelo Matthews. Both were absolutely incredible. Or Andre Fletcher as well. He's the other one that I think deserves at least an honourable mention.
Yeah, I think Andre Fletcher... Yeah, so Andre Fletcher, I considered. I think it would have been between Gurbaz and Fletcher for me. I just felt like, just looking at his runs, he has 260-something runs. And 105 came in one innings, right? But you can argue that, okay, that's why you pick him, to get that big score. But I felt between him and Gurbaz that Gurbaz was definitely the better pick.
Yeah, I think Gurbaz kind of gets things going. Also, Gurbaz is like, he's played in every edition, hasn't he? Actually, it's Andre Fletcher played in every edition. I can't remember. But Gurbaz...
No, he hasn't. I think this was his first one.
Maybe. Gurbaz and Ravi Bopara seem to me as like the two most... When you think of the foreign signings in the LPL, they're the two that come to mind straight away. It's the same Samit Patel wasn't involved this season as well. I love Ravi Bopara, and as I mentioned earlier, if you know, I'd consider giving him a Sri Lankan passport and taking him on tour. No, I wouldn't really. We don't need him. There's enough other players, but he's about as the most Sri Lankan player you'll ever get from England, right? He plays in many ways just like a Sri Lankan player, or classical Sri Lankan player does. The other player who has impressed me a lot this tournament, and I've seen him at quite a few franchise tournaments, and he's never really lit it up. I think this has been the tournament that he's had his biggest impact for, has been Benny Howes, where he's he's been quite consistent with bowling, and he's also got runs as well, which I know he's done sporadically, but I think this is about as consistent as he seems to have been. Can you remind me of who your bowlers were again? Did you pick?
So I've got Tushara, Rajita, Vyaskant, Brathwaite, and between Tisara Pereira, Bopara, and Kamindo Mendes, you get your fifth bowler.
Ah, okay. So I'm not really sure about Kamindo Mendes as a bowling option, but I suppose that's the way you.
No, but he's in my team basically on his batting form. I thought he was excellent at number three for Kandy.
Yeah.
But he, of course, offers that kind of one or two overs that he can bowl, you know, just if the team needs him.
Yeah. I think he's one of those players who, as a number of other striker players are going to do, is causing a headache for the selectors, right? Because coming into this series, I think he looked well out of contention for any white ball, for any white ball teams. And now I think he's, you know, if we were picking a squad off the back of what we've seen, he's definitely put his hand up for it, right?
Yeah, I think so. But also, I think Sri Lanka cricket will be a little bit, personally, I don't think they should make all their decisions based on the LPL, because obviously roles and, you know, so many things are different from, you know, playing in a franchise league versus playing for the national team. So I don't think they should base all their decisions on the LPL and performances on the at the LPL. But definitely, Kamindo is kind of a guy they have looked at in the past, and he just doesn't seem to have gotten, you know, any impactful performances in. Maybe he's not. The problem here is, I think, is that, and I saw a lot of, you know, team of the tournament kind of things, and one of my biggest pet peeves is when people pick people who have scored runs in a particular position and then put them somewhere else, right? And I think Kamindo is one of those guys who has suffered as a result of something like that when he comes into the national team, because he's essentially coming in to plug a gap, right? He's coming in just to kind of... Sri Lanka cricket brings him in when somebody's injured or somebody's, you know, not available. So then he's there, not necessarily in the position that he would have made most of his runs domestically. So I think that has been a problem in the past. Here he was able to bat in the top order, and he was then able to kind of, you know, make an impact. So I don't know whether those positions in the Sri Lankan team are really open for him to kind of make a comeback in and make an impact in. But definitely, I think guys like Samarvikrama and Mendes have probably got the selectors thinking again of them in the white ball setup.
Can we talk about players who've, I don't want to say disappointed, but have maybe not had a great tournament as we were expecting? The two that come to mind straight away are Barnika Rajapaksa and Dashan Sharnika. They were kind of expected to score big runs for their franchise and get Dambola all the way to the end. Those two didn't have great tournaments. Barnika is back being, after his heroics at the Asia Cup, he's back being quite a divisive figure for fans and social media. For some reason, there's people debating on whether or not Dustin Sharnika should still be white ball captain. His performances this tournament have obviously fed the doubters. It's not been great for either of those two, right?
I think Dasun Sharnika didn't have as bad a tournament with like the bat as you would think, just looking at Dambola's performances. It's just that they really sucked during the tournament, didn't they? They were terrible. I think apart from Jordan Cox, batting really didn't get going. Sharnika was able to put in a few good... And number six, I don't know like whether you can expect 50s and, you know, 60s and those kind of knocks, right? Essentially, their role is to finish the game. Ideally, they should be coming into bat with 6-7 overs to go, or maybe, you know, less than 6-7 overs to go. But that wasn't the case with Dambola. He was always coming up around the, you know, 8-10 over mark. So I don't know if he had a really bad tournament with the bat, but certainly as a captain and for a leading a team like that, overall it didn't help his cause as staying on as Sri Lanka captain. Bhanaka Rajapaksha, I think. See, the thing with him is, if you look at his career overall, he's had some really big highs, right? But in between those highs, he's also had really ordinary, you know, performances. Just the type of dismissals, the type of innings he's played. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people still question his inclusion. Of course, there have been a lot of off the field issues as well. But if you look at his performances, you have some really, like the Asia Cup final, his knock was just an incredible knock, right? And then you have performances where you can't figure out what he was trying to do in that game, in that situation. So he'd be really disappointed. I hear he's not available for the ODI series against India as well. We don't know for sure because we haven't gotten the squads yet. But to me, that's disappointing with the World Cup coming up. I don't know what his reasons are, if he has made himself unavailable. But that's disappointing, and you don't want to kind of see that kind of thing from one of your senior players. And when he's not performing in domestic leagues and he's not performing in T20 cricket, then the pressure on him is just mounting, right? Because you have to keep your name, you have to keep people talking about you. That's also part of
the trick,
how things work, right, with selection and stuff like that.
Yeah, he did put that statement out talking about not playing ODI cricket just after the World Cup when they were picking the squad for Afghanistan. Right, but then he did, and he said he was taking a break, but then he did go away and play in the T10, and now he's obviously played the LPL. The statement talked about mental health. I don't want to belittle someone's mental health, but the message is slight, I think, is slightly confused of what he's trying to tell us, and I'm sure he's got his own reasons why he doesn't want to play ODI cricket. I'm sure we'll, in time, it will all come out like these things always do, right? Shall we take a quick break and let's look ahead? Let's talk about two things when we get back. Let's talk about the IPL draft, which didn't go particularly well for any Sri Lankans. And let's look ahead to the squad that might get selected for India as well.
I'm Jared Kimber, and I host two podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game, with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-travelling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
Sorry, Estelle, let's talk about the IPL draft first. We should mention that there is a number of Sri Lankans already retained. Then there's four Sri Lankans, is it four or five, already retained by various IPL teams, including Patrana, who barely gets a mention in when we talk about the squad. I don't think he played any LPL games, did he?
He's, I think, still recovering from injury, so that's the reason why he didn't feature in the LPL.
Yeah. There will be Sri Lankans featuring in the IPL, but I was definitely expecting one or two to get picked up in the draft that we had in the last, I'm going to say the last few hours, because I don't know what the time is. I don't know what day it is. All I know is it's not Christmas Day yet when we're recording
this. It was
this.
Yesterday, Mark.
There you go. what are your thoughts on it? Because I thought Chimera should probably deserves another go. I thought he was really great for Lucknow last year, but maybe it's just the fact that he hasn't played much the last few months. And I think, again, that's what hampered Dilshan Madishankar's chances of getting a contract, is that lack of fitness. And I'm still a little bit surprised that none of our other batters didn't get picked up as well. I think Mendes and Nisankar and Aslanka could probably be a little bit, probably feel a little bit unlucky not to have got picked up, right?
Just looking at the names that were put up for the mini draft, I felt like, yeah, like the two you mentioned, Chamira and Madhushanka, seemed like the kind of the best bets if you think about the IPL franchises and what they're looking for. Lahiru Kumar is another for me, but I think all three, definitely the first two, it's probably to do with injury, and that truthfully, like Dilshan Madhushanka, we've only seen him in the Asia Cup, right?
Yeah.
We haven't seen him beyond that. That's the only tournament he's played, like the full tournament off so far. Didn't even feature for Jaffna in two mini games during the LPL. So I think it's fair that he hasn't been picked up. Chamira, I thought, was a bit unlucky. I thought he had a good season last time. And, you know, he is definitely a value addition, particularly even with the bat coming lower down in the batting order. But I don't really think any of the others can, you know, have too many gripes about it. I think if Chamika Karunaratne had a good World Cup, he would have been picked up. Unfortunately, he didn't. He had a terrible time. We spoke about Mendis Nisanka. I think it's very tough to break into an IPL side as an opener, because that's where they are looking to kind of slot in their local players. So tough to get in there. And I also think that someone like Shanaka could be a really valuable buy, but again, he hasn't shown any kind of form in the last couple of months. So I think there are a few promising names in there, but unfortunately, like, they haven't put in any huge performances of late to kind of, you know, make them a must buy.
I think if you're batting, you've just got to be consistent, right? That's why I think, in a way, if you look at, like, the Sunker and Aslanka, in a way, they're the two that have got the hardest job to try and get a contract, right? Because they're the two players that domestically India produce the most of. But the reason why I think they might at some stage be in contention, just their sheer consistency, right? And I think you look at someone like Shanaka, he needs to just be consistently getting those massive knocks. He needs to be going into the LPL and being the top run scorer by quite a distance. I think at this stage of his career to be able to get in, right? It's just because the competition for batting seems to be just a lot more fit than there is for the bowlers, right? And hopefully, you know, obviously I don't wish ill upon any players, but, you know, there will be injuries, there will be players who aren't able to get to the tournament. And that's when maybe some of these other players might find, some of the other shrunken players might find themselves with an opportunity for the big money of the IPL, and to go and work with, you know, in new other setups and learn different skill sets. Because I definitely think if you look at the players who've been there, the shrunken players who've been there, that they've all improved dramatically while they've been involved in the IPL. So if we can get as many players involved in the IPL, not just the IPL, but the other franchise tournaments around the world, then I think we're on to a winner. Let's talk about this India series. There is a squad that's kicking around the internet at the moment. I'm not sure how official that is or unofficial that is. Charmica's back in it. There is some debate online about whether or what role, if any, Dinesh Chandimal and Angelo Matthews should have, considering their performances in the LPL and also the fact that at the end of this year, potentially, there is a ODI World Cup for Sri Lanka to play in, and they bring a wealth of experience in particularly in that format. What do you think, Estelle? Do you think we should be looking to bring back? I mean, Chandimal's been in and out of squads all year. Angelo Matthews hasn't featured in a white ball series since, I think, 2019, since the last ODI World Cup. Do you think it's right for those two to have a role? And if they're going down that route, what about Disimo Pereira? I know he's officially retired. I'm sure you can talk him out of it if it comes to donning the national team jersey once again. Because, I mean, of all the kind of senior players, he's the one that's won the LPL three times and has been, by all accounts, absolutely pivotal in bringing so many youngsters through at Jaffna.
Yeah, just on Chandimal and Matthews, right? I think, look, when Pramodi Vikramasinghe came in as chairman of selectors and they made that call to leave out all the seniors and, you know, go ahead with a youth, like a youth-centric plan, I thought it was brilliant. I think I was one of the few who did at that point because it meant seeing guys like Dimuth Karunaratne, you know, dropped off from the ODI squad. But I felt like it was a positive thing because Sri Lanka always, what they always do is basically a year before or 6-7 months before the tournament, they're still figuring out how they want to line up, right? And you don't see that in a lot of the major, like the teams that are successful at tournaments. 1 year before the tournament, they basically have the like 15 to 20 who they know, and they have 6 to 7 slots in their team, maybe more, kind of decided. But Sri Lanka hardly ever does, right? Just thinking back to 2019, that squad was insane. It had Milind Siriwardene, it had Jeevan Mendis in it, Jeffrey Van Der Zee was in it, played just one game. Hasaranga was in the standbys. And that's because there was no proper planning. And what Sri Lanka cricket at that point should have done at the end of that tournament was maybe scrap everything and start from square one, building towards the 2023 World Cup, because that is the World Cup that Sri Lanka has the best chance of winning, right? It's in conditions we are familiar with and where our players would be most comfortable in, right? But they didn't do that. And now again, 10 months out from the World Cup, we're still trying to figure things out. I think they need to decide.
Hold on. I
think if Pramodia stays on, yeah.
I think that's slightly unfair. I don't think that they're trying to figure things out. I think that the rough template that was set with the youth reset is still roughly there because it's essentially it's kind of worked. And I think the question is do they need to sprinkle some of the older players in? And by sprinkle, I mean, I picked up...
Salt and pepper.
Yeah, I picked three there. I'm not sure all three make it. But I also look at the LPL and I look at and I go, well, Matthews and Pereira and Tisha Pereira and Chandimal were bigger standouts than at least three of the other players that they could potentially replace. And I think that's what the selection is, right? I also think, because I think one of the problems with the team is that some players have a very defined role in the side, especially when it comes to batting, and other players don't, and other players, some of the players tend to get lost. We talked about, you know, essentially, I suppose one of the discussions could be, do you drop Bardica and do you drop Sharnica and replace him with Matthews and Pereira, right? I'm not saying that's a good idea, but you look at the LPL and that feels like a no-brainer, right, decision to make on kind of current form. But I'm not saying, you know, stop and restart everything. I'm saying, do you bring one? I don't think there's no situation where I don't think all three.
But that's essentially going back to what they were doing, right? So that's what I was trying to say was that they need to, if they want to go back on the youth only policy, then yes, maybe you look at someone like Angelo Matthews or Dinesh Chandimal. My issue is, he seems to be opening the batting and there's obviously no place for him at the top of the order, not right now at least. So then what is his role? But Matthews does bat in a position where Sri Lanka has kind of not been stable. So there may be an opening for him. But it all depends on what kind of, what your outlook is or what your plan is going forward. Because I again think that if 2023 is coming up and you're not prepared, then maybe you look at the next tournament, right? Because what we always do is we go back to the old players, oh, they've done this before, let's give them another opportunity. Instead of maybe trying to build a team that can one day win a World Cup, maybe not this World Cup, but the next World Cup, which is what I thought England did back in, was it 2014, 2015? Yeah, 2015, right? 2014, the Alistair Cook's last series was a 7-match series in Sri Lanka. And England was terrible. And I loved it because I went to watch the games. They were, you know, completely outplayed. Mahalan, Sagarkara, Dilshan, everyone's playing, right? But what they did was they went into that World Cup. They completely outplayed. They got knocked out in the first round. But by then, they were already putting the kind of the plans in place for the next World Cup. That's what Sri Lanka does not do. They don't plan ahead, and the coaches have 2 years with the team, and then they're, you know, told that they're done. So what I feel is, personally, I think Matthews is one of the best players Sri Lanka has ever produced. But unless he's bowling, I'm not sure that he fits into that side at the moment, because I much prefer a team that we can see moving forward a couple of years, then maybe just a team for the tournament and then you're done.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I'd love to see one of Matthews and Pereira picked. And if both of them were picked, I don't know. I can't remember how big the squads are allowed to be for an ODI World Cup. I think it's 20, is it? Then I don't think that's the worst thing. And I kind of feel like the last few years, since Durham, I do think that they've kind of, definitely in T20, that they've kind of got a plan. I mean, it's maybe not panned out at the World Cup the way it was meant to, but it definitely panned out the Asia Cup the way it did. I mean, you can possibly argue that they plucked out Dilshan Madushankar from nowhere. And he comes and he's basically the star of the Asia Cup for SL, right? And yeah, it's interesting because I don't think there's a situation where Matthews is ever going to be able to bowl 10 overs in the game. Probably unlikely to bowl more than about three overs in a game, right?
Yeah, he didn't bowl for Colombo either, yeah, did he?
No.
Which I think signaled kind of maybe that he's not also looking at, or he's not expecting a recall, because I think that's one of the things that Sri Lanka cricket may have kind of told him, is that he needs to be bowling if he wants to make it into the 11. And he didn't, despite being the captain, he didn't bowl. So I don't know whether he's carrying an eagle. We don't know. But yeah.
I just think that the great loss for Sri Lanka cricket in the last 10 years has been Angelo Matthews' hamstrings, right? Because if he was the all-rounder, if he developed and I don't mean this is no way a slur to Angelo Matthews, but injuries have hampered his bowling, right? That's what's, if you go back and you watch his spells when he first broke into the team, you're like, wow, he's going to, he could be one of the absolute great all-rounders. And because injuries took his ability to bowl away from him, sadly, he was, bowling-wise, at least, he was unable to fulfil that potential. So it's a real shame. And I think if you pick him, you're picking him for his leadership abilities and for his batting abilities. I don't think you might get the odd over here or there. If suddenly you can't figure out who's going to bowl the 28th over, then give him the ball. But I don't think he's really a bowling option. Anyway, this is Sri Lanka. There'll be one wicketkeeper and everyone else will be able to bowl spin, so it's fine. Estelle, let's leave it there. Before we do, though, should we read some of the comments? Because I did put a tweet out several hours before we recorded, asking people to, you know, who should get a mention. I think we've just about mentioned everyone, all the players. There was one message I didn't understand. It was from Nathan, who said, was a sad tournament overall, didn't showcase anyone competent to play the big league, which was clear when no one got selected in the IPL auction. Veerkant and Sadira, the only players worthy of mention. Hopefully Lanka keeps politics away and chooses them for the national team. I think I was kind of perplexed by that. I think we're almost at a stage in almost, I'm not saying 100%, in Sri Lankan cricket where there's so much conversation around it now and so much of it is televised and is able to view that if you're putting performances in, you will become part of the social conversation about getting selected for the national side. And maybe I'm being too optimistic. And I think there comes a point where if you're good enough, you will get selected. I think in a way, that's how Bhavika Rajapaksa came back into the side, because he just created this conversation around him about why he wasn't being selected. I do think, though, in terms of spinners coming into the side, I mean, Sri Lanka's two best players in the last 12 months have been Hasaranga and Teek Chana. So it's going to be difficult to break through for a young spinner. You've got to be really special and you've got to be consistently special.
Yeah, and they had good LPLs as well, right? Sure, they probably didn't make your team of the tournament, but both Teek Chana and Hasaranga both had really good tournaments overall. I mean, if you're judging by the fact that Hasaranga was top wicket taker last time around, yeah, sure, he didn't perform. But I think overall, both of them had good tournaments. Just on being picked for the IPL also, to me, it's not really how good you are, right? It's about, in a particular squad, what roles they have vacant. And if you have a leg spinning all-rounder already, you're not picking Vanidhu Hasaranga because you're not going to play two leg spinning all-rounders. You're unlikely to play two leg spinning all-rounders. Similarly, like if you had four openers in your squad, you're not looking at Kusal Mendis or Pathum Nisankar. Even if they've had the best, you know, years of their life, they've top scored globally, you're not going to look at them, right? Because if you already have those options in your squad. So I wouldn't say not being picked in the IPL is necessarily a kind of a benchmark. It's just if you can offer something that a team is looking for, then I think that you will be picked. Because unless you're like Hasaranga, right? Hasaranga obviously has kind of been amongst the top 3 to 4 spinners in the world in the last couple of years. So it's hard to look past him. Teek Chana and why can't I remember his name?
Pathirana.
Teek Chana offers something special, right?
Yeah.
Pathirana, yeah. Both of them offer something unique, right? So I don't think it's like you can't say or you shouldn't be saying that, okay, you know, this guy isn't, Lahiru Kumara isn't a good bowler because he didn't get picked for the IPL. It's just that there are certain things that those franchises are looking for that they want. And, you know, when you see guys like Kane Williamson being picked, you think, how is this happening? But he's been consistent in the IPL, right? In the past seasons. He's obviously, his value has gone down, but he's been consistent. So I'm not sure I agree with you, Nathan, but
it's like
I don't understand what you're coming.
Getting picked for the IPL, it's you just being good enough isn't the only criteria, right? You've got to expect a team to need your specific skill set, and then them to have a space for a foreign player as well. Maybe SLC should get onto the phone to
And be available for the whole tournament. That's another thing, right?
Yeah. Maybe SLC should get on the phone to the BCCI and be like, can we have a special rule where every team is allowed one Sri Lankan player on top of their foreigners as well? Just because obviously there's a special relationship between Sri Lankan cricket and Indian cricket as well. I just on that, I'd also like to see more Sri Lankan players play in the PSL, because it's interesting to me how many English players have played in the PSL and are now moving on to play in the IPL. I think it's one of those, it's a league that people from the IPL spend a lot of time looking at as well. And it sets players up nicely to go to move to other leagues. But let's see what happens with more Sri Lankan players playing franchise cricket. Right, Estelle, let's leave it over there. Firstly, I should say, if you do celebrate, Merry Christmas. I think this episode may end up going out on Christmas Day, which, you know, if you're eating your turkey, however you celebrate, hopefully you are listening to a bit of our LPL final review.
Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka on 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.